Hello everybody, my name is Alan, and this is Alan's Gadget Talk for Thursday, 29th of July, 2021. Have I mentioned it's July? July is we're towards the end of July, and it's already more than a year since we started doing this podcast. It's just insane how, it's podcasts have kind of been like a passion project for me. I can't believe it's already been over a year doing it. Let's hope this continues. There's nothing really to expect here, but hopefully this goes on to be something bigger than myself. It's just insane. 1 year already. I mean, I've tried other things before. You're trying to do YouTube videos, blogging, and influencing, you could say. And those haven't really worked for more than a few months on an end, and then this has gone on for a year, which is not bad. I mean, so hopefully I keep up the pace. While we could celebrate, we keep on going, obviously, and try to grow. But we have plenty of things to talk about today, as always. We got new devices to talk about. Like say leaks, you could say rumors. We have the X3 GT that's already come out. The F3 GT we talked about in the last episode. Now there's an X3 GT, which is not bad. On top of that, Huawei has shown off its new P50 phones, which I think would be worth looking at, given that Huawei is not really a big of a deal anymore, given to what has happened to it in the past year or so. But it's interesting to check out nonetheless. Let's get rolling. I mean, and towards the end, we'll talk about the PlayStation 5. As it sold 10 million units. It's shipped already 10 million units, which is surprising given there's a shortage of these consoles. But yeah, let's get right in, shall we? So we gotta talk about Poco, because they've launched a new phone that has kind of been a talk of town when it kind of dropped, seeing that it was all over Twitter, almost, and people from all over the world have probably talked about it. So Poco has launched a new mid-range phone that they're offering for the global market called the Poco X3 GT. Now, you will probably notice, amongst the keen eye will notice, that this is the third X3 phone that Poco has dropped in the space of a year. There's the regular X3 that's in China primarily, I believe, and then there's the X3 NFC that's the global variant that has NFC in it, so you could do payments and stuff. And then you have the X3 Pro, I believe. Yeah, the Pro came out, that's what I remember. And now you have the X3 GT. That's a lot of variants to keep track of, but there's some differences, and I think that's where you'd understand that this is a totally different phone from what it is. The specs are amazing. If you get past the jargon like AI and this and that, it is just an impressive phone for what it is. It's quite jam-packed with functionality. It's obviously supposed to be high performance for the kind of folks who want to obviously play Free Fire and PUBG like a boss. This is obviously for you, but also for power users who don't want to spend a lot of money on a phone. This looks like a pretty good option. In terms of specifications, the Poco X3 GT, bearing the name GT, features a MediaTek Dimensity 1100 CPU. This is built on a 6-nanometer fabrication process, has an octa-core ARM-based CPU with 4 Cortex A78 cores up to 2.6 GHz and 4 Cortex A55 cores up to 2 GHz primarily, along with a 9-core Mali G77 ARM chip. Pretty cool. So you're not losing out much, honestly. Again, when I talk about power users, you're probably always on your WhatsApp, you're browsing Twitter, you jump to Instagram, you watch TikTok, those kind of folks, you're not losing out, honestly, compared to, say, the Snapdragon boys. I mean, Snapdragon obviously has the upper hand in terms of performance and optimizations, but MediaTek obviously is catching up in terms of performance, and you have nothing to lose here with the chip. It has it comes with just 8 GB of RAM primarily, and 128 or 256 GB of UFS 3.1 storage. And yes, you have LPDDR4X RAM, which is not a big deal, but it's quite a lot of it's fast. That's that. But you get fast storage, which is not bad for $300. It features an X-axis linear motor, the first on a Poco X series phone, apparently. That's what the press release is told, so that's surprising. Yeah, 5,000 mAh battery, 67 watt fast charging in the box. Yes, chargers included. You got 6.6 inch FHD plus dot display. It has a punch hole camera on the front, dead smack in the center, you know, top center selfie camera. 120 hertz refresh rate, that's a big deal. You get 240 hertz touch sampling, which is important. Obviously, should be double the refresh rate. FHD plus resolution, white color gambit, a brightness of roughly 450 nits typical, which is what you'll get. Reading mode 3.0 and sunlight display 2.0. This kind of already has come out on other Xiaomi phones, but yeah, it's cool to have it on an X3 series phone. It's coming from the Pro, actually, this high refresh rate display. So that's interesting nonetheless. You have, it weighs 193 grams. It has Gorilla Glass Victus on both sides, like the F3 GT, which I think is pretty cool. You get dual SIM, dual standby, 5G. Yes, 5G work on both SIMs. And I think that's a big deal, because before, there are phones that had just one SIM slot for 5G, and the other would be for up to 4G. And you had to make those compromises, but not anymore. The X3 GT has dual SIM 5G support. Both SIMs can do 5G out of the gate. Mid-band 5G, of course, not millimeter wave. But still, better than nothing. Bluetooth 5.2, Wi-Fi 6, NFC. You have an IR blaster, which is pretty cool. And it's going to come in handy, because I can't run my air conditioner because the remote's not working anymore. So, I mean, it'd be lovely to have this phone to act as a remote. If you're curious about the camera, you have a 64 megapixel main camera on the rear with that is 1.4 micrometers in pixel size. You could do 4-in-1 pixel binning out of the gate. F1.79 aperture, 8 megapixel ultrawide sensor with F2.2 aperture and 120 degrees field of view. 2 megapixel macro F2.4 aperture camera. You have night mode included, which is pretty cool. Along with a 16 megapixel selfie camera, F2.45 aperture, it's in a punch hole, which is pretty cool nonetheless. You have a sight fingerprint sensor that's coming straight from the Redmi Note 10 series, in a sense, and has the selfie camera based face unlock, which is what it is. You have dual speakers, so you could do stereo sound like a boss, and Dolby Atmos processing is available. That is if you have content that does Atmos out of the gate. Overall, a solid little phone, solid all-round phone for power users primarily, and the casual gamers alike, you know, the odd PUBG session or two. It comes in three stunning colors, light blue, you could say it looks black and white. The back, weirdly, looks a little bit like the Redmi Note 10 Pro. But here it's a little better because you get more RAM, at least. You get a fast refresh rate display. You get, basically, it fits Poco's, you could say, mantra, if that is. That you get everything you need and everything you don't need. Which is what it's all about, really. So it's about being feature-packed and good value for money, which is what it is. So yeah, the base spec will start from $299 from places like AliExpress, GearBest, Banggood, or from local retailers across the world. And the double storage variant will be for $330 primarily, give or take. So it's coming at a pretty good price already. But yeah, I mean, this really is, as I mentioned already, this is quite a all-rounder for power users primarily, hence the name GT. It's all about performance, but specifically the MediaTek chip in question, the Dimensity 1100. As I said, if you don't mind not using a Snapdragon chip, or you don't have that preferential treatment that, oh, I need a Qualcomm phone, you know, because the SIM card, because my mobile network can do the bands that, you know, Snapdragon phones can do, you know, that kind of nonsense. If you don't mind the processor, it's a good phone, really. Dimensity 1100, it is a fast process of what it is, and I think that's where you get the savings, really. That's where the cost does, that's where the phone's affordable in a sense, is you're getting a MediaTek chip. And honestly, if you're quite a power user, you won't really tell. And again, if you do some casual gaming, you won't be able to tell the performance hits primarily. But it's good to have 120 hertz refresh rate. Again, I'm a bit of a Mi fanboy and a Poco fanboy and a Redmi fanboy, so I have nothing but good words for these kinds of phones. It's pretty good, frankly. But there's some good things on the X3 GT that I think you'd definitely love to have. Has Gorilla Glass Victus on both sides. Nice to have because this is on high-end phones to start with. So the latest and greatest Gorilla Glass is pretty nice to have. You have 120 hertz refresh rate, and that features dynamic switch functionality. So when flicked on the phone, it will go from 30 hertz, it'll jump all the way up to 120 hertz, and so your phone won't really be running on 120 hertz 24/7. So your battery light at 120 hertz, so your phone's battery will not be impacted that badly. You got a 5,000 mAh power battery, but you won't see a drain like most phones that have that. So when you're doing some light reading, you're reading an ebook, it'll run at 30 hertz. You're browsing social media, 30 hertz. Watch a video, I don't know, gameplay, 60 hertz. PUBG, 120 hertz, and that's how it works. So dynamically switches based on the application you're in and the mode you're in. You can turn it off in settings if that's possible. That is, let's see, there must be a disclaimer here. Yeah, it does go through a bunch of refresh rates, but you can turn it off in the settings. So yeah, you have the big battery, you got the dynamic refresh rate display, not as fast. It can change based on your needs, and I think that's wonderful. And also, if you know how these displays work, it won't drain your battery. Good display. It's got 67 watt fast charging. This is actually the first Poco phone, surprise, believe it or not, that has 67 watt fast charging. Poco phones have had 30 watts, 18 watts is standard. 30 watts, and you get 67 watts, which I think is really cool nonetheless. This means you can go from 0 to 100 full charge in 42 minutes, according to Poco, which I think is impressive. It's good to see that fast charging is trickling down to more and more phones. This actually was on some Mi phones and Redmi phones, and now it's on a Poco phone. I think this was on the Redmi Note 10. I'll have to check. One moment. And I gotta redact my word, take my words back. It was on the Redmi Note 10. Most Poco phones, including the X3 Pro, had 33 watt fast charging. The Mi 11 Ultra had 67 watt fast charging, and that came out what, 3 months ago. So yeah, you're already getting features that were on ultra high-end phones 3 months ago at a dramatic fraction of a cost, which I think is wonderful. And I think that's what makes it quite a phone for power users and casual gamers alike. On top of that, I don't know if this is a big deal for most people, because believe it or not, you might not really be living in a place with 5G yet. But this phone has dual SIM 5G. So it has two SIM card slots, whole two SIM card slots that can do mid-band 5G. So you can get, in some places, you can get gigabit speeds out of the gate, and you can probably get double or triple, you can get two, three times faster downloads than 4G, regular 4G off the gate, regular 4G open suite test, 20 megs per second. In the same region, you get 100 megs over 5G. And I think that's good. The fact that that's available, you got 5G built in, but also you get on dual SIMs, you can take advantage of data plans and stuff. So that's pretty cool. I mean, you're kind of ahead of time in some places. In South Asia, primarily, outside of Sri Lanka, really, you don't have any big 5G networks on just yet. So this could be a bit of a big deal. So once those networks go live, you have access to that 5G infrastructure, and you cannot get some good data deals in that regard. So it is a really good phone for $300 primarily. But you look at those specifications. Oh, yeah, and can do NFC out of the gates, which I think is wonderful, because it's a global phone. And the thing about this X3 GT is that it's going to be available around the world, and so you're able to buy it off AliExpress if this does come out soon. And again, it is quite a phone that is that again, just like Poco, everything you need, nothing you don't, and I think that's wonderful nonetheless, like their literal slogan in that sense. So this is around $300 and it will be available, don't know where it's written, but it's already available in some regions through Xiaomi's official store. See, if you do check the Mi store in some countries, it is already available. It's not gonna be available in India, surprisingly. According to the execs over at Poco India, they have good enough phones that they don't need the X3 GT, and I think they have a point in that it would probably cannibalize some other models because of how good it is. So that's interesting, nonetheless. Primarily, so yeah, I mean, it's what do you think of the X3 GT? Are you gonna be getting it? Let me know, obviously, through my usual socials. It's in the show notes. You know what to do in that sense. And speaking of new phones, Huawei, depending on how you pronounce it, Huawei has some new flagships already. It's surprising given that they released the P40 last year, and well, we haven't even heard about it since, but now we have the P50 and the P50 Pro. But this is interesting. It's kind of a phone that is quite a flagship, but is cutting some things out, so it's interesting. First thing to note, there's no Pro Plus model. There's only the regular P50 and the P50 Pro, which I think is not surprising given Huawei's circumstances in the smartphone business. It's not been doing well, really. It's been doing terribly well, and it'd be great to see them thrive. I mean, who wouldn't? But given all that Huawei's gone through, this recent flagship series is interesting in terms of what you're getting here, specs-wise. So let's just walk through the specs real quick. The P50, regular P50, has a 6.5-inch 90Hz flat OLED display that's clocked at 90Hz, as it's already mentioned. It does HDR. It does HDR, like the Pro. It's got a 4,100 mAh battery, 66 watt fast charging over USB, and 50 watts of wireless charging. Now here's the bit that will be interesting, in case you're kind of like curious. The P50 has a Snapdragon 888 chip, and not a triple, and not a current 9000 chip, because of the chip. Because of Huawei kind of running out of their own chips to make, and they couldn't really produce them because of, well, I don't have to explain that, you know how it goes, because of restrictions that Huawei has been having to produce its own chips. So it has had to rely on Qualcomm to supply them with the Snapdragon 888 processor. You get 8GB of RAM, 128 or 256GB of storage. You get a microSD card slot, and it runs Huawei's Harmony OS 2.0. their own operating system out of the gate. But here's the bit that will shock you. The P50 and the P50 Pro does not have 5G. It's 4G only. Now, I don't know what decision they took. I'm sure Huawei, obviously, the thing about them is they could do 5G, even with such limitations and stuff facing them. But they could have tried to save money by, you know, using some other lower grade cellular chip, but I'm surprised. 4G only? How? Like, will they have a 5G variant? I mean, this is a flagship phone. They gotta have a flagship specs. Gotta have 5G on it, if you know what I'm talking about. But interestingly, you have 13 megapixel selfie camera. You've got a 12 megapixel. So basically, the camera system is interesting. You have a 50 megapixel sensor that is sitting behind 23 millimeter lens with f/1.8 aperture and optical image stabilization. And then you have And you have periscope zoom lens also. That is that's with a 12 megapixel sensor, and you have a 30 megapixel ultra wide sensor and 30 megapixel selfie camera, as I mentioned before. And that's on the regular P50 as it is, whereas the P50 Pro has both a Kirin 9000 and Snapdragon 888 option, but both only do 4G out of the gate. Still don't understand how or why, but I'm sure they're needing to cut corners somewhere that they had to offer just a 4G variant, maybe. You have, on top of that, you got 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128, 256, or 512 gigabytes of storage. You have a maxed out variant with 12 gigabytes of RAM and 512 gigabytes of storage. So if you ever really wanted a monster spec, you can get that too. Primarily, 4,360 mAh power battery, 66 watt fast charging, wired, and 50 watt wireless fast charging, like the regular P50. You have stereo speakers and IP68 water and dust resistance, like the regular P50. Oh, and I forgot to mention the display. You got a 6.6 inch, 120 hertz curved OLED display, so at least that's the difference you get compared to the regular. The P50 Pro has a curved display, OLED, 6.6 inches, 120 hertz refresh rate, and it has HDR built right in, and 300 hertz touch sampling rate. But you get the same touch sampling rate on the P50. So the Pro is really the maxed out, ultra high-end flagship Huawei phone that you really should be looking forward to. You have the P50 Pro in its camera. I don't know why I'm crapping out a bit, I don't understand, but oh well. The P50 Pro has the same 50 megapixel sensor as the regular P50. You have 40 megapixel black and white monochrome sensor, like on previous Huawei phones. What has 26 millimeter lens and f1.6 aperture, a 13 megapixel ultra wide angle camera, 13 millimeters lens, f2.2 aperture. You have laser autofocus and periscope zoom lens with 90 millimeters of focal length, which is interesting, and 64 megapixel sensor finally with f3.5 aperture and OIS built right in. So all in all, if we get this correctly, the P50 Pro has four cameras with laser autofocus built right in, whereas the regular P50 has just, if I can get, yeah, and just, and then the P50 has three cameras, but just, and laser autofocus. So, and that's interesting. So you know where to go with, primarily. So the P50 Pro has a monochrome sensor compared to the regular P50 that does not have that. But the P50 has all the sensors that you really need for a regular camera. But the Pro also has a monochrome sensor, so you can get rich, detailed photos, if you know what I'm talking about, in black and white, if you really want to do that. The P50 Pro has this feature called the XD Fusion Pro, which doubles the amount of gathered light compared to P40 Pro and increases dynamic range by 28%. Both phones can do 4K video capture, which I think is wonderful nonetheless. So really, the P50 has three regular colors. It comes in white, black, and gold, primarily you could say, and have this gradient finish, which looks wonderful. And the P50 Pro has five finishes, gold, white, black, pink, and this iconic Huawei gradient white finish, which I don't know what it's called, but it is, looks wonderful. So those are colorways primarily, which is pretty cool. Both phones have Harmony OS 2.0. They'll be available worldwide. We don't know if this is going to be Android only, or this will have Harmony OS 2. But it is coming to China, obviously first, their home market, which is interesting. So you're curious about how much it costs. So the P50 will be available in September, and I think that's owing to the chip shortages right now. They're trying to secure supplies, so you know. It's already kind of, they're already able to get the Snapdragon 888 stuff, so it's kind of difficult, but oh well. So, and the P50 Pro is going to be available on August 12th, but pre-orders go on sale tomorrow, which is kind of today, 30th July. All right, so the P50 starts at 4,500 yuan RMB, which is $700 for the base spec. And then double storage you get for 5,000 yuan, so around $700 to $800 primarily, around $800 probably. The P50 Pro, if you want the Pro, the Snapdragon 888 variant, the cheapest spec, which is that one, will start at 6,000 yuan RMB, which is $930. The 256 and 512 gigabyte variants with either Qualcomm or Huawei's own chips will start at 6,500 and 7,500 yuan RMB respectively. So that's about over $1,000 at this point. And the maxed out spec with 12 gigabytes of RAM will be available in September, and it will set you back at least starting 8,000 yuan RMB or $1,240. So pretty high-end phones with high-end prices, and you only get 4G on them. You don't get 5G on them, and that's surprising. Again, that's been the biggest surprise to me. The cameras have been interesting, but you only get 4G on them, which is surprising. I'm sure this is to make the phones work across the world. But yeah, compared to the P40, you only get a single selfie camera. The P50 has a flat display. The Pro has a curved display. The Pro has an additional sensor, monochrome potentially. It's got a proper camera setup. So you can take a wide range of photos. Curved OLED display, high refresh rate. You can get a Kirin 9000 or Snapdragon 888. The regular P50 only has Snapdragon 888. And basically two spec options, really. So the Pro is probably the ballsy Huawei phone to get, the ultra high-end model to get, and then the regular P50 is just good enough for regular use cases. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting what Huawei has brought to the table, given that it's really what they can really offer after everything. They're not making that many phones out there, if you think about it. But yeah, it's kind of interesting what we have here with the P50, a phone that we thought was going to be an absolute flagship, but they kind of did cut corners in some places. So you get a Qualcomm chip on the regular P50, and then the P50 Pro, you have a choice of Snapdragon or Kirin processors, which I think is interesting. So yeah, I mean, it's quite fascinating. This is absolutely fascinating what we have here. What do you think? I mean, love to know what you think of the P50 series. There's no Pro Plus, and that's because of Huawei's difficulties. I'm sure the chip shortages have played a role here, given what we have, the situation that we have here. But quite an interesting flagship from the folks at Huawei. Didn't think it was going to be like this, though. That's for sure. But yeah, this next story is interesting, according to GSM Arena. So the IDC, International Data Corporation, has released sales numbers for the second quarter of 2021 in China, for the Chinese market, and Huawei is nowhere to be found in the top five. That's surprising. Now, it's no longer the world's second biggest phone maker, in part due to the trade restrictions that the US has imposed, the entity list restrictions. It's quite political. So Huawei has gone from being number two to probably eighth or ninth biggest, and also you could say Huawei has not made that many phones in the past year or so, so the drop in sales has not been surprising in that regard. But the shocking part is that in the Chinese market, Huawei is not the biggest player in town, really. The number one player in China, according to IDC, is Vivo with 23.8% market share. Oppo is number two at 21.1%, and then Xiaomi is third biggest at 17.2% market share. That's surprising, and Huawei is now in the other section, which is quite shocking nonetheless. I don't know what has really changed. I'm sure it's just the fact that Huawei hasn't really been able to offer quite compelling models. I think the weirdest part is that Huawei doesn't have that issue of the Play Store or Google services working or not working, like globally in the rest of the world, where Google Play is required, and if Google Play is not available, then the phone is a hard sell. Whereas in China, you don't have that issue really. WeChat's there, it's on all platforms. All the app stores have all the big apps, you know, so should be a problem for Huawei, but I'm sure it's just the fact that they haven't had any stellar phones in the past year or two. It's probably been this past year really that has caused Huawei to lose so much market share. Primarily, weirdly enough, Honor is the fifth largest phone brand in China with 8.9% of the market, and that's interesting, nonetheless, as I would tend to say. But that surprised me really. You know, Huawei is no longer the biggest phone brand in China. You'd think that if they couldn't conquer the world, at least would maintain a respectful presence in the Chinese market. But now, no one's buying a Huawei in China. That's surprising. I think it's not that difficult to switch in China, really, if you think about phones. It's not that difficult to switch from brand to brand. It takes seconds, really. So, honestly, loyalties do change. And probably there are a few people that are going to buy a Huawei regardless. But, yeah. I mean, even in a market where people could afford to buy two or more phones, it's surprising that Huawei sort of is not the biggest brand in town anymore, which is surprising. Surprising me, honestly. That's probably, you know, this sales data is not lying, though, that's for sure. So, you know, I mean, but nothing's impossible. Huawei could regain a bigger market share in the next year or so, if they have back-to-back solid releases, but that depends on Huawei's ability to do that. But yeah, hopefully they do rebounce. Man, the smartphone industry is aggressive. I mean, you can't slow down really, and that's the reality right there. Alrighty, we got a whole bunch of things to talk about, so let's just go in quick succession. Realme's now. We talked on previous episode about Realme's MagDart technology, magnetic charging, that they're claiming to launch with the Realme Flash that that was kind of revealed by GSM Arena on Tuesday when we talked about it. And now Realme is doing an event next week on August 3rd. They'll show off a new phone. They're claiming they'll show off the Realme Flash and a magnificent magnetic innovation. You can guess where it's headed. MagDart. The Realme is going to show off the MagDart technology, the magnetic wireless charging, their answer to Apple's MagSafe technology, on August 3rd, and the event's at 12 p.m. UTC time. That would basically be 1 o'clock British time, 5 o'clock Pakistan time, and 5:30 Indian time. So if you want to watch and see what Realme has on offer, then you be the judge on that, but it's interesting. Pardon me. Well, it's interesting. I've seen a teaser of this already. Another teaser on another Realme social page, on their Twitter page that I follow. And it shows the thin charger that they have, which is pretty interesting. We've talked about the Mi Mix 4 also on the previous episode. And now it's gotten certified by... it's gotten certified from the Chinese TENAA, which is China's sort of equivalent to the FCC, where they certify devices for sale. And we have some interesting specs here that have been revealed. The first fact is that this phone will have 8 gigabytes or 12 gigabytes of RAM with just 256 gigabytes of storage. So that's interesting. We're seeing it on a lot of high-end phones. Interestingly, this has 5G support primarily, standalone and non-standalone, and it can do it on two SIM cards, so dual SIM 5G support, probably like the X3 GT that's been mentioned before, because Xiaomi can add that into the phones, and can run Android. Hey, at least that's something to be known of, that it runs Android. So that's interesting, primarily. So it's gotten a certification, so we now know a couple of things, and we probably have a render for the certification, and that shows a completely clear phone top to bottom with ultra thin, with very thin chin, pretty much you could say, top and bottom. It looks elegant nonetheless, and it's curved on the sides nonetheless. So that's interesting. And this next one will shock you. It's probably part of the Android versus iPhone debate that's been there, but it's crazy that this has gotten so far. It's affected basketball, the world of NBA primarily. What happens if you texted from your Android phone in a group full of iMessage folks and the NBA and a NBA coach is like, that's not Unity. That's the iOS Android divide token way too far, because apparently a Milwaukee Bucks coach, now obviously at the Dallas Mavericks, Jason Kidd, basically did just that. So this interesting revelations come from a book about NBA players primarily, written by Marion Feder. Now I don't know anything about NBA, so forgive me if I don't understand some of the terms here. From this book called Giannis, The Improbable Rise of an NBA MVP, and the excerpt essentially mentions, and I'll read this out to you here. At one point, center Thonmaker didn't have an iPhone, messing up the team's Blue Bubble iPhone group chat. Kidd was upset about it and made the team run because Kidd felt that Maker not getting an iPhone was an example of the team not being united. I have no words to say. I mean, but the thing is, the problem in the US, you can't. I just don't want to be ignorant. Like, I know in the US, like, iMessage is a thing. That's why people have iPhones in America. iMessage is a big deal. Free text messages and video voice calls between iPhone users. That's why people buy iPhones, sorry. And someone using Android phone, I mean Thonmaker using an iPhone, an Android, sorry. That caused no unity. This is nuts. I mean, they should have used WhatsApp, but then the thing is, I come from another part of the world. I mean, in my part of the world, for all my Yankee friends here, for all my Yanks from the States, from across the Atlantic, you know how we get around the Android iPhone issue, you know, the iMessage bubble going blue or green, depending on how you look at it? We use WhatsApp, we use WeChat, we use Signal. Telegram. That's the thing. Download it. Give it a shot. You get the same thing, free text messages. You need Wi-Fi, 4G, you know. Give it a shot. But in the US, I mean, y'all don't use WhatsApp. We get it. And, but it's, but it's an example of division in the team. That's crazy. I can't believe that a phone would show that, a phone would show how much attachment you have to a team. This is baffling me. This is beyond me. I mean, who knew that it was gonna be this ugly? I mean, but then again, I don't want to be. I know I understand, but I don't want to be ignorant that Americans don't know WhatsApp. But you guys can use WhatsApp, but you're not familiar with it. I mean, SMS is quite popular. iMessage is quite popular. You can't get past that fact, but. Come on, guys, like, there are the instant messaging apps you guys can use. I mean, start using WhatsApp. I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, it's not that difficult. And the weirdest part is that what baffles me is that in a country like the United States, I mean, most people don't use an Amer a Facebook owned. Okay, th now that's the thing. WhatsApp's on my Facebook, so you're not being sucked in by Zuckerberg, right? Oh well. But you're using Instagram, right? But still, there's Signal, there's Telegram. But oh well, I mean, I don't know when this iMessage bubble nonsense, bubble shaming will go off, go away. I mean, to be honest, in most parts of the world, most people don't really use iMessage. It's like a thing that's there in the background. You don't really notice it. You won't care if it disappears tomorrow. If Apple discontinues it, you wouldn't. No one's gonna cry about it except people in the U.S. So, yeah, I mean, it absolutely is baffling me. Nonetheless, I mean, just can't we have enough of this bubble shaming? I have no words, honestly. I have no words in this regard. Alrighty, moving from I Apple versus Android, iPhone versus Android, sorry, that's how it goes. We gotta talk about electric cars and Tesla. So Tesla's done its, I believe it's Q2 earnings. It's a Q2 earnings season in the US. So we now have earnings reports for the second quarter of 2021. And Tesla's done really well in Q2 of 2021, despite shortages, despite chip shortages that have been surprising. Chip shortages, that's a thing. And yeah, I mean, oh. And I mean, this past year they've been going really well. I mean, going from strength to strength. They've sold over 200,000 vehicles, primarily, and have earned a profit primarily. Just for context, it has earned over $1 billion of GAAP net income primarily, and an operating margin of 11%. And it's the first time they've gone this far in its operating history, which is interesting. 11% profit margin is wonderful. I think that speaks to their now launched the Model S Plaid, which is like a pretty premium car. So they've added back some margin primarily from now selling some newer Model S's. But speaking of which, there's new a software update that enhances some functionality, and we gotta go through this quick, interestingly. So your Tesla now can do a whole bunch of new things. So let's probably start with some interesting things that you really do need, and then down to things that are kind of nice to have. So first is a range display. So now you can switch between battery percentage and distance units by tapping this range display next to the battery icon. So you could click the little button, and you could switch between your range or your percentage, and you could do that if you want. Honestly, it's preferable to some folks want a range. That's a bit more understandable. Percentage is a bit more relevant for phone users. If it's 20%, you go back and charge it. That's your preference, but you can do it a click of a button on the display, which is interesting. Another thing is now Tesla allows you to connect your in-car system to Wi-Fi, to a Wi-Fi hotspot while driving your car. And this is wonderful for people who have unlimited data plans. If their phones have unlimited data, you could just can you know tether your phone to your Tesla car primarily, and let your Tesla access music streaming, navigation, all the wonderful features that are on a Tesla. You can do that now in this update. So you just need to go into Wi-Fi settings, remain connected, and drive. So this is already available before, but you had to be parked, then it would allow you to switch Wi-Fi networks. But now you can just use your Wi-Fi hotspot, which is wonderful. So you can get a Mi-Fi, or you can get a Wi-Fi hotspot, or you can do tethering, and you can run it while driving your car. So you can access a lot of features of the internet. The OS can now support three additional languages: Hungarian, Romanian, and Russian, which is wonderful. So if you speak those languages, good. This is also a cool feature of Tesla's that no other cars that I can think of have, even with a web browser built in, is that on top of letting you play a whole bunch of wonderful games, Tesla lets you access big streaming services using this thing called Tesla Theater. So you can access YouTube and Netflix, and now you can access Disney Plus. So that's in the update. So you can go into Tesla Theater, and Disney Plus will be right there, ready to watch. You just need to log in and start watching. Great for when you wanna, great for watching Loki or a Marvel movie while charging your Tesla. So that's wonderful nonetheless. And then now it's over to some of the features that are kind of nice to have, kind of. They're not a big deal, but nice to have. Dash cam improvements. So now the dash cam will automatically save clips when your vehicle detects the occurrence of a safety event. They'll be stored in to whatever storage drive you have. There'll be a built-in flash drive, I believe, and that saves it to that primarily. So it'll turn on in case there's a accident or an airbag deployment. Before you had to press on the dash cam icon to save the event that just occurred. So that's interesting primarily. So it's in the settings. You have mirror auto dim, so you can do that too. So you can now automatically enable automatic dimming for your mirrors. That's nice. And finally, car wash mode. I mean, that's actually a mode that you can do. So you press a button, it's in controls, service, and then car wash mode, and you click it. And then the idea is that it'll close all windows, makes sense, locks the charge port, disables windshield wipers, disables sentry mode, walk away door locks, parking sensor chimes, and then for automatic car washes with conveyor belts, the car free roll option will shift to neutral and prevent the parking brake from automatically applying if you leave. So that's interesting. There's a car wash mode. I mean, never knew I needed one. I mean, you literally, I mean, if you're in a car wash, you close your car and then it starts washing away. But that's cool. It's a nice to have primarily. So if you have a Tesla, go update your car now, and there should be some new features nonetheless. I think it's a good thing about Tesla. They do bring out new features through software updates, which I think is really, really cool. And it really is a computer on wheels, nonetheless. Full self-driving, I think it should come down the road. So it's still in beta, that's what I've heard so far. And finally, I'm just gonna read this off here. We're thrilled to announce that as of July 18th, 2021, we have sold more than 10 million PlayStation 5 consoles globally. This makes PS5 the fastest selling console in the history of Sony Interactive Entertainment, and we couldn't be more excited by the amazing response of our fans. That's basically one of Sony's executives describing the fact that the PlayStation 5 has sold over 10 million units, which is surprising. Honestly, I've lost the energy to say this, but oh my goodness. Wow, the PlayStation 5 has been out of stock. There have been shortages of this console for the past year or two, and the fact that they've been able to ship 10 million units is surprising. So, seems like the factory is working on overtime, and there are units reaching out to consumers all over the world, most likely. That's interesting, primarily. And that's on top of the fact that there's some couple of new games that will be coming out later in the year and next year that are anticipated. So, that's crazy, primarily. But honestly, 10 million, on top of the fact that there've been chip shortages, and so there've been quite the hefty lot of shortages for this console, and the pandemic, which literally affected its production. Who knew? This console would have been delayed till this year. It would have been released later this year, had probably the supply chains didn't had the supply chains not respond fast enough, they would have delayed it, but it's crazy, honestly. 10 million consoles, like they've done it. It's amazing, and also on top of the fact that there have been shortages of this console, which is crazy, honestly. I don't know what to say, honestly. It's good for them. Good that they've got this far. It must be a lot of hard work, but it's working, and it's getting to people that need it. Hopefully, there should be adequate supplies of this console by next year. Hopefully, chip shortages go away for this to happen. So that's that. And then on the flip side, weirdly enough, there's a new software update that is coming to the console that will let you upgrade, that now lets you do an SSD upgrade. So if you've used a PS5 and if you've ever opened it up, there's like a spare SSD port, an M.2 port, where you can add extra storage to the PS5 and literally double its storage, triple its storage right away. But that was not available at launch. Now you can add that additional storage, cause and they're offering it to just beta users at the moment. It's not a final release. It's going to be available as an update down the road in final. But if you're a beta user, you can start doing that right away and tinker with adding more storage to your PS5. The way to do it is that your SSD should be PCIe Gen 4 or better. And it should have read speeds at least of 5,500 megabytes per second or more. And there are a lot of drives that can do this at this point. There are a lot of options. For context, there's a WD Black SSDs that can do that at those speeds. More than that, your SSD, M.2 SSD, should have a heat sink that should fit in the PS5's body primarily. That's something to note. So essentially the cooling structure needs to be smaller than 110 millimeters by 25 millimeters by 11.25 millimeters or in inches, no smaller than 4.33 inches by, you get the point, 0.984 by 0.442 inches. So it shouldn't be that thick that it should be, you should have difficulty popping in the body of the PS5 when switching out for the SSD. And yeah, you can now do 3D audio for your built-in speakers on your TV, so that's pretty cool. And yeah, a whole bunch of fascinating features primarily. Nonetheless, I mean, this console is like shipped 10 million units. That's what baffled me, honestly, amongst all things. Good on Sony. They're really making play possible, that's for sure. Alrighty, I've literally lost my voice at this point. What do you think of everything you've heard today on the show? Let me know on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Sander_Mamoon99. It's in the show notes. Do check it out if you can. Subscribe to the show. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. Share it to your friends and family. That would definitely help. And yeah, till next week, this is your boy Mamoon signing out. Peace, take care, stay safe, and I'll see you again next week for another episode of Mamoon's Gadget Talk. Alright, thank you for listening. Ciao.